excuse me for having enormous flaws that I don't work on!
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. It's been a little while since we've had a real cracking Simpsons drop in there, so thankfully that one lines up nicely with what we're talking about today. Rob Calder joined again by Basketball Development Officer Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
And High Performance Coach for the Country Women, Zoe Carr. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's slightly ironic we are talking about coach well-being as Zoe is in a zombie-like state at the moment after having worked camps for the last 2 weeks as she's rolled in. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening on this one. As a reminder, you can like, share, subscribe, retweet, all the good things that go along with social media. There's not many of them, but there are a few, as it turns out. If you can help grow the podcast listenership, that would be fantastic. Unfortunately, we keep hiring people at Basketball Victoria that used to listen to the podcast, and it impacts on our numbers going down. So the more people we have listening, that would be fantastic on that end. We're going to jump straight into it this week with...
The coach shout out. Can we play the full version next time?
That was the full version. That's the problem.
Oh, does it tune out? Okay.
Yeah. No,
Do you think we made the whole song?
Yeah, you know, check it out, Apple Music. You know.
No, we didn't. I mean, to be honest, I think we actually need to cut down that version because it does seem to go for a little while, to be completely fair, but not the point. Coach shout out this week is a big thanks to the under-12 Jamboree coaches in particular that are giving up their time over the school holidays for the benefit of the kids. We know the schedule is not overly conducive to getting a break, which again we'll talk about a little bit later on, but like the country coaches that were up at Jamboree last week, they would have potentially gone up on first thing Saturday morning, I want to say, for a coaches meeting, training, coach the kids for a couple of days, on the end probably take an annual leave to be able to do that, time away from family, friends, all that sort of stuff when they could be on school holidays, for a better experience for the kids. And the coaches for mine, and Metro Jamboree is going literally at the moment, so I can't really talk to that one at this point, but the country coaches I thought did a phenomenal job over, 4 days, I think it was, Zoe.
Yeah, huge. And the ability to just really buy into the coach education as well, and it was great to have both of you there to be able to facilitate that and help out with, whether it be the in the workshops that you ran or being able to have extra people to sit on benches and give live feedback. And the growth in every one of them was massive, which meant they all went there with a growth mindset and continued to improve, and as a result, so did the athletes. So, yeah, it was a huge few days, but really productive, and couldn't have done it without the coaches.
And the odd part, I'll say odd for lack of a better term, we normally would have one head coach per team. This is the first year we had assistant coaches, so all of a sudden we went from a very nice, manageable 24 coaches to talk to and give feedback to and see up to 48. And that obviously doubled the workload, because now you're not trying to just give feedback to a head coach, you're trying to give feedback to an assistant coach who also wants some feedback on what they're doing and how they can be doing things. And it's kind of a divvy at one. Like, I know, Nick, you probably gave much the same feedback I did, because there's nothing really tactical we can give them feedback on. It's all about communication style and those sorts of things.
Yeah, it's definitely it was really cool to just get out there and talk about their body language, tone, things like that. But they were so receptive to it. That's what it really impressed me as well. And their positive energy, like the energy they brought into that program, it reflected on the players as well. So the players wouldn't have reacted that way in such a positive way if it wasn't for those coaches either.
No, not a chance. And I think there was, like, I think it was the Monday morning maybe, we had like a 7:15 coaches meeting after they got in early on the Saturday, all day Sunday coaching, training, those sorts of things, and rolled in for the 7:15 coaches meeting on the Monday morning. The energy was fantastic. They were brilliant. Like, at 7:15, you're not normally getting everyone's best attention, to be fair to say, but they were phenomenal. And so massive thanks to the coaches that have given up their time on that, because as much as the coach development side of things is about them, for sure, the amount of kids that came out of that with a positive experience and just a a renewed love of the game and those sorts of things, phenomenal. And genuinely couldn't have done it without the coaches. And this is why I tend to go on little rants every now and again about why coaches are the most important people in the sport. You know, it's just without good coaches, we don't necessarily have good players, good environments, those sorts of things as well. So, again, a little bit of a biased perspective, of course, because naturally our players are the most important. But you know, from the coaching lens, you just saw what an environment that was. And so if there are people that are looking to get involved in the Jamboree moving forward, please email Craig Hockley on the countryside or Susie Lupino on the metro side and just register some interest. So it'll always be over the school holidays, I think, Zoe, from memory. So September school holidays is
the country is ones will anyway. I'm not sure whether the metro one might be going back to mid-year, but it's definitely this sort of around that 20th of September weekend.
Yep. So if you do want to get involved, obviously get involved with the skills days to start off with and those sorts of things, and then potentially move on to benches from there. And it was great. I think this time around we had such a blended experience where we had a number of returning coaches that have been there previously and they moved more into mentor type roles, and a whole bunch of new coaches coming through as well, Zoe, like a couple of your players in particular jumped in.
Yeah, I had a couple of, graduating under-18s, but then also a current under-16 or moving into bottom age under-18s. And it was really good. It was good for them. It was tactical in who we asked, because we noticed at sessions that, there was, you know, an IQ and an ability to communicate and those sort of things, all those things that make great coaches. So giving them, not saying that, you know, stop playing and start coaching, but.
No, that's my job. Everyone, start coaching.
But being able to just give them a taste of what coaching is like, so then whenever the inevitable day comes where they finish playing, because that does have an end date, they can, you know, they know there's something more for them that they enjoy, and they seem to have an absolute ball. There were some nerves at the beginning, but the way they evolved as coaches as well. But it was funny hearing them say things like, oh, so this is what it feels like when, like, we don't do what we're told. Like, yeah, mate, this is what it feels like.
So you just created a whole bunch of I told you so moments. Exactly.
Pretty much. That's the only reason I did it, though.
There was one that walked past and just like, there is just so much dribble repenetration at the moment. I'm like, welcome. Like, you have now crossed the bridge and you're on the coaching side.
Start of your journey.
But really cool. Really, and it was a really proud moment to see them step into those roles as well and embrace them and enjoy them too.
And that's what I think it does create, is obviously a little bit of opportunity that a few of them will probably sit there and say, I do want to do more of this, and they want to get involved more as a coach. But there's a few other players that have looked around and thought, oh, they got to do that. I wouldn't mind doing that in the future. This is something I have an interest in as well.
Yeah, I was approached at trials by a couple of athletes asking if they could do it next year. Yep. So really cool. It's we know that being able to have coaches players transition into coaching, whatever the level, whether they're, you know, they don't all have to be Opals and Boomers. They can be players that just loved the game and want to stay involved, that had a great IQ but, you know, either for whatever reason couldn't take it further. And they can step into the coaching space and maybe make their path that way. So it just offers other opportunities. But really cool that now there's a bit of a, hey, I want to do that too. That looks like fun.
Well, and I think the first year that I can ever remember it, more women and girls coaching than men and boys.
Yeah.
Over the board, because we had a number of women jump over onto the boys' side, which, again, that's where they coach, so no problems with that whatsoever. But a very heavy women and girls lineup on that, which is fantastic, because I think now the next challenge is, can we transition them into higher, better, those sorts of things as well. And there are some people that have that skill set from the 12s that just love doing it,
because and there's that's nothing a fun wrong age with group. That too.
No, like, not at all.
Go and be the absolute best under-12s coach you can be if that's what you enjoy, and you know you don't have the aspirations to go further, and that's totally fine, but go and be the greatest under-12 coach and set up a bunch of athletes for success as they want to try and move through the pathway.
Yep, I really like it. So keep a look out for those next year, for those of you that, that want to be involved in that, and we'll try and loop you into those as best we possibly can. So we are talking coach wellbeing. This started as a very flippant conversation that Nick and I had earlier this year. And it's like, hey, we should do a whole month on this. And one of the very rare occurrences where an idea we've had, we've actually followed through with, and we're going to do a coach wellbeing month. So obviously this month, we want to try and give you as much of the information that you will potentially need over the October period. And then into November, obviously you try and exhibit those habits in your day-to-day life and try and live a slightly healthier lifestyle. The biggest thing is, when we look at coach wellbeing in general, and this is not necessarily aimed only at coaches, this could be players, this could be just people involved with the sport, those sorts of things too. The reality is there are probably four main areas we will talk about, being nutrition, physical fitness, sleep, and mental health. And I mean, if you can cover off those four, you're in a pretty good spot. Obviously, usually it's sort of like a sliding scale. One will be up as the other one's down and those sorts of things, and it's trying to get them all as high as you possibly can, because ultimately we have a lot of coaches in the sport that for various reasons have had health issues over the last couple of years, and that is everything from burnout to just not living a real healthy lifestyle to investing too much of their time to coaching 18 teams on a Saturday and those sorts of things and bouncing literally from one time slot to the next. We want to try and keep as many people in the sport as we possibly can and make the sport what they want it to be for them as well. So to do that, you have to look after yourself. You can't give when you have nothing left to give in that sort of space. So trying to make sure that our coaches are looking after themselves and trying to make sure that those around them are okay with that as well. Every now and again, like you spoke about it before, Nick, sometimes you have to say no.
Yeah, I was talking before the pod, though. I go, oh, my speech is going to come back again. don't say yes to everything. But it is a real thing. You do need to say no. You need to make sure that you find a balance between coaching, personal, and work life. And sometimes you need to make adjustments. You might commit to something for a season and go, look, probably not for me, probably a little bit too much. I need to take a step back. I'm only saying that of experience from myself, because saying yes to everything doesn't work. It does burn you out, and it makes you react to things as well. Like it's I'm taking a nosedive here, but I'll just keep going anyway.
Go with it.
When you're tired, when you're not looking after your body, when you're not thinking about other things, anything other than basketball, you're just running from one thing to another, you start, like, you hear something, you interpret it probably incorrectly, and you snap at them, or you do something where you look back on it and go, why did I do that? Okay, and it's that's why it's really important to focus on these four things as well.
Yep, you've maybe hit on our social clip for the end of this one, so you've done well there, because I actually didn't preempt any of this. Hey, just out of curiosity, this is a show of hands, actually not a show of hands, just an eye into the microphone, again, forgetting we're not a visual medium. Are we pro or con a shower before gym?
That requires context.
Okay. So up at Under 12 Jamboree last week, Nick and our boy Fernando Rios Rodriguez took it upon themselves to go early morning gym. Was that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. About 6:30 every morning.
Yep. Troopers. Like, setting a fantastic example for everyone. Timely? Like, were you an on-time person, Nick?
I was on time.
Fernando?
Not so much. Because turns out his pre-routine ritual would throw back his time a little bit. This also includes dinner, by the way, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, different saga altogether. But Fernando was a shower before gym person, then go to gym, and then a shower after gym person, which I found double dipping a little bit. Like, it just wasn't an efficient way of doing things, which is why he was continually late for things.
Yeah, continually late. It doesn't make sense to me.
Continually late. He was late once.
Twice.
Over a four-day period.
It's half. Like, straight away. Yeah. Zoe's gone into bat. Fernando.
He can rock up on time. Just don't have the shower. I don't see why he needed to have it. Like,
this will end up the whole podcast.
So we
who
might
was
need
he planning
to
on running into, by the way?
You.
So what is he? He doesn't need to have a shower.
Take
like,
it
I'm
as
not
a
be
compliment.
Like,
maybe he thinks a bit of you.
To be fair, you also drove to the gym, which was literally a 200-meter walk away. Is this another story?
I did. And do you remember the net, like after the third time, I go, hey, it's actually closer than I thought when I walked on it.
It's far quicker to walk it. Makes sense. Anyway, we're on to, we'll jump in with physical fitness as the first one in particular. So, I mean, obviously for coaches, a lot of hours on their feet, you know, you're coming off this at the moment, Zoe, where you've had sort of 2 weeks solid of coaching in particular. The ability to be on the sideline, the ability to get on court and demonstrate things, though, that all matters. And this comes into physical fitness in particular. Like, I still remember I was demoing a defensive drill, and we're going back like 10, 14 years, like it's a while back now. And like was doing some defensive slide stuff and felt the little twinge in the calf. And it's like, oh, this is not a great situation to be in at the moment. I need to go away and do some work on this. But it is, we're not saying you have to look like a player still. We're not saying that you need to be cut from rock or anything like that. But you do need to look after the physical fitness side of things, because that is, I think physical fitness is probably the outcome of the other three more than anything else. Like, you'll notice physically that you're struggling if your nutrition isn't good. If your mental health isn't good, if your sleep isn't good, the physical side of things will be a little bit of a byproduct of all of those, whereas you don't necessarily see physical fitness impact the others quite so much. But the physical side of things, it's just, I've found when coaching, you shouldn't be sore after coaching. And there were times where I'd be coaching and it's like, why do I feel like I've just been hit by a truck? Like, it's because you're up and down the sidelines or you're on court. And you've got to bounce from one thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next thing, because you don't want to be one of those coaches that literally just stands in one spot for the entire session, brings all the players to you, then sends them back out again. You want to try and be on the move as much as you possibly can. How much, like, should coaches really be doing? And we'll talk to Darren McInnes about this as well, which who will come in a couple of weeks' time on the pod, but how much physical fitness should coaches be doing, Nick?
It's first of all, you can't really do it if you're saying yes to everything again as well. Yep. So just going back to that, first of all, I mean, I've read a bit about it, so I'm not a professional, so please don't take my advice or anything like that. But
that goes with everything we're about to tell you as well. There is a disclaimer on this podcast.
Can we just do that at the start? Just cover all of it.
Do your own research with all of this. Yeah. Anytime before you're about to start physical
fitness.
It's
all experience-based.
It is. Please consult with your healthcare professional before you try and go on like a 15K run or anything like that. Don't be doing anything silly like that.
Yeah. So for me, like in the gym, and I think Dave Peters spoke a bit about it, like it's more mental that helps him come in and do the gym. For me, I've heard that you can just have benefits by going once a week for like 30, 40 minutes, and you can do what's called the compound lifts if we're talking about strength. And I know Darren will talk more about it as well, obviously, but compound lifts are just your squats, deadlifts, bench press, overhead press, those sorts of things, your biggest bang for buck stuff. Walking every morning. Like yep. It doesn't have to, I don't think it has to be crazy. Like you said, Rob, like you don't have to be looking exactly like the athlete. It's more to create enough strength that you can stand on your feet for long periods of time, because you're also, like, I'm assuming when this goes out, is it going out this Friday?
This Friday, yeah.
Okay, so trials are coming up, right? So that's going to be really strenuous. Some people are going to start at 8:30 in the morning and they're going to finish at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
If they're lucky.
They're going to be on their feet the whole time. Yep. So just creating that little base strength really helps. Walking is good for the mind, good for the body. Like, I love my morning walk down to the beach and back. I usually
How's your walks been going?
Okay, so didn't think we were doing this.
I haven't even contributed yet.
I really want to dive into this story too. So
didn't think we were doing this, but apparently we are. So I've actually been fantastic in the morning walk. I enjoy my morning walk. It is a time, like, and again, for context, I'm an early morning person. Like, I'm a 5:30, wake up and out the door and go for a walk. And I enjoy my walk because it's kind of at a time as well where nobody else is up. No one's chasing me for stuff. I think I've spoken about that before. I enjoy the morning walk. I enjoy the fresh air. There are mornings where I enjoy that it's raining and I get to walk in the rain and those sorts of things too. Depending on what's going on, podcasts, music, depends on what kind of mood I'm in. Sometimes I'm looking to learn, in which case podcast. Sometimes I'm not looking to think at all, in which case it's music and I'll just deal with it. This is unfortunately a very volatile time of year in that it is swooping season for the magpies. And consequently, I think I warned you maybe a couple of weeks ago, Zoe. I'm like, geez, I don't know that this is the safest time to be wandering around first thing in the mornings, because I feel like it's magpie season and I've seen it happen a couple of times. And thankfully, I've avoided this to this point. until yesterday, where I was happened to be walking down the street, and as I was walking, I saw a magpie like literally eyeballing me, flying directly at me. I'm like, this doesn't seem like a great idea. I'm going to cross over to the other side of the road. So I jump over the other side of the road. And as I continue walking, I'm like, I wonder where that magpie ended up. So I just turn around at the last second as the magpie is literally pecking the backside out of my head, and managed to get rid of it, put the hoodie on, kept walking a little bit further down the road with a little bit more hustle than there was previously, potentially. Sort of tapped on the top of my head and like, oh, good, the magpie got me and I'm bleeding. So there are always perils.
There's a significant mark on his head, by the way.
The drama is the trauma that I've experienced since. Like this morning, like a bird would fly near me and just like flap its wings, and I'd be like you would look at me and think, that's Peter Garrett dancing. Like the movements I would make to try and make sure that I was not in that position, wild. I maintain, go for the morning walk. Just maybe avoid trees if you can.
Or wear a stack hat with sticks in it.
Either way, whatever.
You know, doesn't matter what other people think, Rob. You do you. Yeah. Like, that's it.
I will not stop my morning walk. I will be more diligent about how I do it in the future, and my head will be on a swivel. Like, that is the biggest thing.
Just trying to improve your times.
Well, it has not done that. So
it may teach you to go down a different route next time.
And I did this morning. And what did I see? Someone else getting swooped by the same magpie. Not me. Either way, physical fitness. Back into it. Zoe, what are the... like, what are the reasons, I suppose, or the barriers that coaches would potentially face in getting physical fitness in?
Well, yeah. I mean, me talking about physical fitness is unbelievably hypocritical because at the moment I do nothing. Part of it because, like right now, I am completely cooked. 2 weeks of like Jamboree into Nugget Camp, into 20s trials, into SDP trials. And the thought of doing anything around those makes me feel a bit ill. But anyway, I think one of the things, though, there's also a difference between physical fitness and coaching fitness too, the ability to stand on your feet and coach, and 'cause it's not just drawing your energy physically, it is mentally too. So it's doing things away from the court is really important. And I'm a massive advocate too of just like 30-minute walks. I see people do, you know, all these 15 and 20K runs and great, like if you can and you enjoy it. But it doesn't have to be that to be useful. Just the 30-minute walk, I think, can do a lot, not just for the body but the mind. But getting the reps in as well, coaching, leading things, selecting details, all those sort of things, that's a fitness in itself too. So, you know, what I would implore coaches to do is offer to help out other coaches with their coming up into trials. It's a perfect time to get those reps and just offer to help another coach, either run the court for them or assist with selections or those, you know, things that go into trials. So you can get those reps because, yeah, it's not just simply about being able to walk around the courts for, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours.
Yep, and there's mental fatigue, obviously, that comes with that because, as you said, and that's why I think the early morning stuff is probably – you're going to be at your peak in the morning. Like if the reality is if I had to do like a day of trials or something like that and then I had to exercise that night, not happening. Like because that's when I am probably – and it's probably when I should go and exercise, to be completely honest, because that's when I can get out a lot of the inner thoughts that you go through. And it's like, did this work well? Should we have done something differently? Was the timing of this right? Should we have looked at this player instead of that player, those types of things? I probably should do it at the end of the day, but I'm not. Like that's, again, the reality of it. I find my best time is first thing in the morning, like when I'm going to go and do things. So I think the biggest thing is just create a habit more than anything else. Like find your time and find when you're going to do it and then dial into that. And if you have to say no to some things, Nick, that's fine.
Yeah, and it's relative too. So like if you are coaching late into the night, we're not suggesting that you sacrifice sleep to do those walks.
Definitely not.
As well, so
yeah. I mean, my energy is probably the best within 45 minutes of waking up. That's probably when I'm going to feel my most energized, I would have thought, during the course of a day. So that's probably when I'm most likely to go and do something. But I think the big thing is create the habit. And the habit might be as simple as put your clothes out the night before or put your runners out the night before to make sure there's no excuses. Like that's part of getting prepared and being organized for it. Go and walk with someone else or go and lift with someone else. Just maybe get your times right as to what time you're supposed to be at the gym and make sure that you are there at the same time. But
no pre-showers either.
Yeah, it's but have someone that can keep you accountable to that. Like if you know that you're going with someone else, you don't want to let them down. Like you want to do the right thing and turn up and those sorts of things as well. So I think the accountability side of things is good. Or just call people on your walk. Maybe don't do it at 5 a.m. like when I'm walking, but you know, if you are a night walker, call someone. Like,
but there's different ways to keep yourself accountable and stuff as well. Like for me, if I walk in the morning, I put my stuff outside and I walk Orlando, which gives Sarah about an hour off.
Yep.
So now that she knows she gets that hour off, she's going to keep me accountable to make sure I do that walk.
Parenting.
Yep.
The gift that keeps on giving. Like, but it is. I think that sort of thing. I think set yourself a routine and set something that you can get involved with that it's not going to ruin your next day. And that's the biggest killer is that we see coaches go on these health kicks and those sorts of things, which is great. Like, credit to you for doing something. But when you go to the gym for the first time and you put yourself through the absolute torture of going through it and then you can't walk for the next 4 days, well, that's probably not a sustainable habit now. Yeah, that's the killer.
Last time I tried to go back to the gym, I'd said to the trainer, my job is on my feet. I can't be in a place where I can't walk. And he's like, yeah, no worries. And then I came out and realized in different ways he'd made me do 70 squats. And so I couldn't walk the next day. Like, I don't know if there's a muscle behind your knee, but there was something behind my knee that was a knot. Like, it was ridiculous. Yeah. And so what was the result? I never went back. Yeah. And so yeah, taking that and some people when it'll be great when Dharam is in here, because some people are critical of his sort of slow and steady approach, but he gets results. He's like the people he works with gets results because of that, because they minimize their injury, they minimize this. It's not that they're not sore and they're not working hard, they are, but it's leaves you in a space where you can continue to do that work rather than, you know, at one stage I walked out to Rob and I'm like, we need that old lady handle next to the toilet because I can't get up and down.
and the stair lift, you know that as well.
That one was just laziness. That had nothing to do with being sore. Like, that was just.
But like, it was bad. And I never went back. So.
But in the gym community, there has been a bit of a phase shift with, you know, the whole notion of I need to get in and get a burn. Like, yeah. I know that's sort of a common thing with the gym goers and stuff. But a lot of podcasts and stuff I listen to is they suggest, like, you should walk out and you should feel fine because you actually build the muscle when you finish lifting. Mm. So you shouldn't be in there. Like, you're doing a cardio burn if you're trying to really work up and you can't even walk. Like, you just need to create an environment. I mean, Dharam will speak more about this, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But it's find something that's appropriate to you too. And from an accountability perspective, like, I do wear an Apple Watch, which keeps streaks. So like, I know I haven't missed a day this year. And there was a day, I think it was about a month and a half ago, where I had like a 6 a.m. start and I knew I wasn't going to be able to get in beforehand. I got home, sat on the couch, and after a full day, it's like the last thing I feel like doing is exercising. But it was this stupid little squeaking noise inside my head that's like, hey, you haven't had like 240 days to not do today. So, all right, I'll get off my ass, I'll go for a walk then, and just do the half hour. But it's fine what works for you, because part of it too might be, it doesn't have to be a lift or a walk or a run or anything like that. It might be go do yoga, like do something mindfulness in that sort of space that can just center you and ground you a little bit.
Or foam rolling.
Foam rolling would be huge, like for a lot of people. So it's fine what works for you. But again, if you are looking to do that, please consult your healthcare professionals before you take our advice on physical fitness.
I feel like we're going to say this after every 6 seconds.
A lot. The next one we're going to talk about is nutrition. So really fortunate, and it came through you, Nick, to have Alex Parr that's jumped on the podcast. So she'll be next week's pod. about nutrition. So she's the nutritionist for Southeast Melbourne Phoenix and for the Richmond Football Club as well. So she speaks really well about this, and you can follow along on 8 Nutrition, which you can find her on Instagram as well if you want to do like some private consulting or anything like that. Nutrition, I find, is, again, one of the easier ones to get wrong when you're a coach, because you do tend to live the life of super early, super late, middle of the day, kind of off, depending if you're in that working in basketball or not, or if you have, I'll say in inverted commas, a real job where you do the early morning, go to your job, and then do the late night. Nutrition isn't one that is easy to get right, I think. So what would it potentially look like? The nutrition will impact on your mood, without a doubt. Like, it's I fear for the team that gets Zoe on a hangry moment, where she hasn't eaten for a little while. Like,
it's real.
trust me, that wasn't a shot in your direction. Like, we all know what it can be like, especially when Nando's like 15 minutes later for dinner than he was supposed to be.
Because he was having a shower.
But, you know, nutrition is such a big part of it. The inclination of like skipping a meal or just getting fast food because you're on the move from one place to the next thing, those sorts of things, that happens fairly regularly. And like mentally, I almost conditioned myself for a while there where it was almost like a rite of passage where I'd finish a game on a Friday night and I was like, cool, it's time for drive through. And it's like, no, that's not a healthy habit to have. Like, that's, and again, like a lot of this, I'm probably at my most unhealthiest when I'm coaching, like in season coaching, what I'm talking about. Pre-season, great. Post-season, great. In-season, awful. And nutrition was one of the ones I've really struggled to get right, I suppose. So what are the most common bad eating habits you see amongst coaches, Zoe? Like, what are the things that you've seen?
Well, I mean, what you just said about like the drive-through, you know, you think about, say, take a VJBL coach, for example, has worked all day, doesn't have time to come home between work and the game.
Yep.
So goes straight to the game and then coaches the game, and then by the end of the game realizes, I haven't eaten since, you know, midday at work. I'm starving. Nothing's open. I don't have time to cook when I get home. I'm just going to...
Quick hit.
Yeah, I'm just going to grab, you know, Macca's or KFC or something like that. And I don't blame them. It's hard. I mean, I look at country coaches and the ones, you know, the ones that have been involved. I've had over the last couple of weeks all those programs that I mentioned, all those trials or events. And there's been some coaches that have been to most, if not all of them. And I think I've had 3 meals at home in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, you can't meal prep that. Like, you're having to make decisions then when you're out, you know, what are you going to have for dinner? It has to be something, you know, not takeaway, but you might have to go to a restaurant or something like that, and then try and make the best decision possible. But then also that comes into it is you're probably a bit tired from really long days, both physically and mentally. So sometimes you just want something ordinary to make you feel a little bit good and have that instant gratification of, oh, this is something I enjoy rather than something that's going to be more healthy to me. And then that's just that vicious cycle that starts again. So I think, you know, obviously things like meal prepping is important, and trying to get as much of that as possible. Again, I have been ordinary at that lately. So this has come at a really good time because, I need to get back on track with this sort of stuff. But trying to prepare meals and so, you know, you're not forced through that drive-through. Like, because as far as I'm concerned, if I come home, and it might just be me, but if I come home late and I haven't eaten because I didn't want to have Macca's or KFC, my sleep that night will be ordinary because I'll spend that whole night waking up hungry. So I'm better to, even if it's ordinary food, eat, and then at least I'll get some sleep.
Well, there's a couple of options, obviously, coaches can look at. go with a grilled option rather than like a deep fried option. Like if you have no other choice, but you have to go through one of those because you know there's no alternative,
yeah.
Grilled over fried obviously would be a big part of what you can look at. I did notice, like, and not that I'm necessarily plugging for a sponsor on the podcast, but Guzman y Gomez is usually a bit of a 24-hour open option. And well, they have pretty been pretty low good,
calorie,
very
too.
Good.
Yeah, like, it's pretty healthy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, should you buy four buckets of fries? No, but you know, there's some stuff.
Here's where you've
help.
Gone wrong. They're not going to sponsor us now because we're talking about them anyway.
Right.
If you want us to continue talking,
yeah, exactly.
You know, please email Rob Coulter.
Well, funnily
I'd
enough,
like to subscribe to your newsletter. Yeah,
funnily enough, I think I pumped up Nando's a little while ago, and all I've seen is like three shut Nando's since. So I might be the problem with GYG at the moment. But that has been one of the better drive-through options. Mm. Like if you are in the vicinity of that, you know, it's probably one of the better ones I think you can go with.
Yeah, I think also, and I won't go into too much detail with this because Alex will speak more about it, but bulk prepping,
yep,
like preparing large amounts and things like that. Like she goes into some examples of that, yeah, I think, does. Next week as well. So that's a really good option to have things ready for you in the fridge. I think compounded on what Zoe was just talking about, added to that is like the cafeteria food. Mm. Like I know there's more healthy options that sit at the front now.
Yeah, but they're not as kids. Appealing as the pie.
No. The salad wrap is not as good as the potato cake. Oh,
the Diamond Valley, the hot dogs at Diamond Valley used to have.
Yeah, before they went healthy.
Amazing. Yep.
But on top of that as well, when coaches go, all right, I'm going to grab some healthy options and like packaged food is so deceitful as well, which we're going to learn a little bit about next week too. So if you're thinking about that or thinking about like what to eat and what things look like, I'd highly encourage you to listen to the pod next week as well because she breaks it down quite well, like even the what to read on the side of the packaging. Like
yeah.
At some absolutely. Of the stuff I was like, oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. No, absolutely not. And she did a great job with it. Like Alex was brilliant, obviously. So if you are looking to go down that path, I would recommend connecting with her and booking in a time. But it is one of those things too where I think sometimes you can confuse hunger for thirst, and just a drink can make a massive difference over the meal and those sorts of things. Because there are times too when, like, and I know this, like I'm certain I've done this before, whilst I can't remember the specific example, I know I've done it. My team's played on a Friday. We haven't played as well as I would sort of hope we have. And it's like, this sucks. I don't enjoy this feeling. Three large pizzas, thanks. And, you know, that'll be dinner tonight, dinner tomorrow, dinner Sunday. And it's just like, well, while I feel like this, I want to almost self-harming. Like, I know what's happening at the time, but, you know, I just haven't been able to sort of put the pin in knot. And I think the biggest thing is similar to what you're talking about, Nick. Meal prep, if I know there's something at home, I'm more likely to go back and eat that rather than stop and get something on the way through. So I think the biggest change like that I've made lately is actually been having breakfast. And because I was never a breakfast person, like I steered away from it fairly heavily. But it's amazing how quickly the cravings for like something like really salty or really sweet go away when I'm full already. And it tends to be when I haven't eaten for 12 to 16 hours because I've just been all over the place. That's when it's like, oh, that packet of Maltesers, yeah, I'll just grab those and they can be lunch today. Or, you know, that packet of Shapes over there, yeah, I'll just have a packet of those. Those are the biggest problem. So eating, I think, more regularly and consistently, I think, can be a real help in that space. But again, I would recommend, obviously, consulting with people before you go down this path of just please don't do the Instagram diet mentality. Like we are not influencers in any way, shape or form on this podcast, and nor are we trying to be, about what's health and nutrition look like. But please do your own research and do it properly.
Yeah, I think the overall message we're trying to send is like if you just reflect on it and seek advice on how you can change some of your ways. If there's ways you're not sure of, go speak to a nutritionist or a dietitian and they can help you out. I think just be aware of it is more what we're trying to say.
Absolutely. And ultimately, I'm not going to tell Zoe to stop barbecuing. Like, one, tasty. Two, she's not going to. So, either way, like, but there are ways to do it
better. How many barbecues do you have again?
The ratio is currently 5-2 in our house. Yeah, nice. As in 5 barbecues and 2
not anytime soon. Yeah. You're right.
So, it's probably not stopping, it'd be fair to say. So, but work those things in. Like, when you know that's going to happen, okay, well, do I have to have, you know, like, 14 sides to this, or can I have one? Like those sorts of things. There are different ways to package it up, I think, that can be a little bit healthier. Sleep is the next one we're talking about. Nobody functions at their best when they are working on a lack of sleep. And like there were so many studies around that people looked at the impact of a lack of sleep compared to a lack of food and drink, and the lack of sleep had a greater impact on someone's physical health than food and drink did. So the ability to get enough sleep, and again, Zoe, I appreciate the irony of this, as you could probably do with about 7 more hours of it as you're in on this pod, it will impact your decision-making, it impacts your patience, your tolerance, your emotional regulation, like all of that comes into sleep. And it just, the amount of stress you go through when you're literally running on fumes. And I get it, there are times where our schedules do not allow us to get enough because we might have the last game at night. I mean, this can be, this is not necessarily just say representative basketball related. This might be you play a domestic game of basketball at 10:10 on a Tuesday night and you have to get up for, you know, work the next morning. That turnaround is not a great one because by the time you wind down from whatever that game is, that very easily be midnight later, and then you've got to get up the next morning and try and find a way. I think the biggest thing for coaches, there's almost been like a lack of sleep is a badge of honor at times. It's like, oh, I stayed up all night scouting this game. And it's like, yeah, but that's dumb. Well, that's not smart. But you, how can you possibly be at your best the next morning when you have not slept in that space? Like, I mean, you spend a lot of time in that world now because you have a child, Nick. So a lack of sleep might be an
not
issue.
Not so much now, but yep. Like it did bring up a point of like the first 6 weeks we were getting 1 to 2 hours, something like that, because he had colic.
Yep.
And colic is just upset stomach. So like it'll be all through the night. He barely sleeps. When he is awake, he's crying. So it was really difficult. But you could, I also, like, I don't wear an Apple Watch, but I wear a Whoop device, but it does track the quality of my sleep, which I'll get to in a second. And it was all in the red. Like you could see it just drop when Orlando was there. And I think the quality of my sleep affected me more than how many hours I was getting.
Yep.
So blue light blocking glasses, like I use them. It does show a little bit of a, like the data does show on my device anyway, that there's a little bit of improvement. I mean, the best way to do it is to turn all devices off and not watch them at all. That's the easiest way to do it, but sometimes you can't do that. You know, the blackout mask when you go to sleep and things like that. But this, sometimes it's, you're going to get lack of sleep, and it's we really noticed how it changed our mood, how we sometimes spoke to each other, which was in only because we were grumpy, we were so exhausted, we were stressed. Like there was all those sorts of things. Nowadays it's pretty good. It's like a, you know, every now and again, you know.
But it can happen. And I think, again, the hardest part is routine. And, like, I notice it as I'm getting older. Like, I tend to be around about a 9:30 to 10 o'clock bedtime. I prefer to be probably more 9:30 if I could. But all I take now is one night where I'm, at, like, still up at 11:30 and it messes me up for, like, 3 days afterwards. Like, just trying to get back into that routine of trying to get enough sleep is part of it. And, obviously, quality and quantity matters, but like Zoe, as you're almost yawning as we're going through this, we've spoken about sleep too much. Like you were talking about the amount of the hours you get before midnight in particular.
Yeah, I've got no data to support this, but it's something Phil Brown used to tell us when we're at the AIS, that every hour you get before of sleep before midnight is almost like worth 2 hours. So it's like almost worth double. I don't know if that's true or not, but it does certainly feels that way. Like, I've got to be honest, there's been a couple of nights where I've woken up thinking, oh, I've got to get up, and I've looked at the clock, it's like 11:30, and it's the best. It's the best feeling.
Punching the air with joy.
And then I've got to try and calm myself down so I can get back to sleep.
Because you're so excited you've got all this sleep left over.
But, yeah, sleep is incredibly important, and I think one of the things when we talk about the importance of sleep within the coaching landscape, as coaches we put up with a lot of or deal with a lot of stresses, obviously the games and coaching and not so much that is what I'm talking about, but like, you know, pressures from parents, pressures from associations, pressures from high performance coaches, pressures from whatever, and pressures from your normal, you know, as you said, real jobs. And when we're running on a lack of sleep, there's this theory that we read messages, emails, things that we don't have a personal interaction with somebody. We read them in the mode that, or the way we're feeling. So if we're tired and run down and a little bit grumpy and somebody sends us a message, we're going to read it as if that's how it's being projected to us. And it could be completely innocent, but because of our mindset, because we are, you know, almost in survival mode, we take it and it can blow up into something so much worse. Like I've found it, you know, in conversations with Rob before, and, you know, I'm horribly tired and he'll say something and I'll snap back because I've thought he's saying it, you know, I've read into it or because of the way that I am and or the mode that I'm in, and then realize, oh, he wasn't actually saying that at all. It's not how he meant it. And then I have to apologize and that sucks. So
Still waiting for that.
That's not true. You better,
it's happening again.
Yeah, but if but yeah, obviously there's a big difference then when, you know, I have got the right amount of sleep and I am feeling energized and good to go, and then that, you know, that comment's made, and or even if it's a joke, like you take jokes that,
yep,
they're meant to be jokes but you take them, you know, personally or whatever. So there's a big difference in that, I think, that sleep comes in, and so it could be something with a parent wants to have a conversation and it could be completely innocent, but we're going to go in with this mindset of, oh, here we go, like, again, or, you know, whatever.
Or even if a kid's, like, you're coaching on a Friday night, if you're in that mode that you're talking about, like, you could just snap at them and they're just asking a legitimate question, yeah, and now, absolutely, you've created something.
Yeah, conflict with referees, that'll happen as well. Yeah. When you're tired and fatigued, the last thing you want to be told is something you don't want to hear. And so, again, that raises issues. And, like, I've lived in this space, obviously. Like, I think all three of us have lived in this space, so can certainly empathise with the coaches out there as well. Like, there were years where I was doing the four 6 a.m. sessions, like Monday through Thursday, was also coaching all of those nights, was then coaching the Friday night to then back up and coach the Saturday morning, depending on what the commitments were on the Saturday, and then back on again on the Sunday morning. Like, I'm not getting any sleep. Like, I'm still working, I'll say again, a normal job within that as well. There was no way known I could be at my best at that stage. Like, it's just physically impossible that I was getting enough sleep, because I'm also a stressor when that if you leave me alone to wake up on my own, I do tend to wake up on my own, sort of 5, 5.30, that's my window. But if I know I have to be up at 5, that stresses me out and I get a terrible night's sleep. And in particular, when some of the times I was the person with the keys to open the gym, the worst feeling in the world was that I wake up at, you know, 6:15 and I have all these missed calls and messages on my phone saying, where are you? And it's like, my God, I'm so sorry. Everyone's woken up and I was the person that was supposed to open up the gym. That's like, that freaks me out.
That's happened. That's, yeah, happened to me. Oh, not me personally, but like someone who was coaching with me.
Yep.
Like, slept in, and same thing, working exactly probably those many hours as well.
Yep.
And then I'm ringing him, like 20 missed calls, and he just picks up the phone. It's like 6:30 in the morning. Yep. All the kids are out the front gate.
Yeah, sorry, you know, kids, on the way back. And that was the thing. Like, my solution to that was not to adjust the schedule. My solution was, well, I probably should get a Red Bull in the morning. And it's like, that's not a healthy way to go about this. Like, that's, you know, you're just causing more problems down the road in that sort of space. So just being mindful of those sorts of things. Sleep is such a massive one. And again, we'll talk down the road about sleep. We'll have a whole podcast on that one as well. There was also a podcast real early on in our piece in the Talking Split archive. So you're going to have to go back a fair way to find it. I reckon it was maybe around about 30 or 40 or something along those lines with Ian Dunican, who speaks to us about sleep in particular. So you can go back and have a listen to that one as well if you really want to. The last one we've got on here is mental health. And this is obviously a little bit more on topic now than it was, say, 10, 15 years ago. Like, mental health was almost like something that was just flipping and thrown around, like not being real, whereas obviously we're a lot more across it now. Where do you think mental health sits at the moment, Nick, with coaches in particular? Like, is there enough being done in that space? Are they more aware of it now? Are they more aware of it because of their players now?
probably more aware of it because of their players. I would say first as well, the first three topics we spoke about directly impact this one.
Yep.
So like essentially in a perfect world, if you can get those first three right, it's going to impact the fourth one, the mental health side of things. I think so. But at the same time, I don't think we're doing anything about it.
Yep.
Is probably the best way I can explain it. We know that volunteer coaches are sometimes overworked and they say yes to everything. We still call them up if we need them.
Yep.
We still call them up. I'll give you an example. I gave it on a pod a few weeks ago where there was a coach that I was working with when I was at Casey, and he rolled into one of the sessions and I go, mate, you look exhausted. I go, just take next week off. And he was like, oh, thanks, Nick. I really appreciate it. I was like, why didn't you just tell me? And it's the whole, yeah. We do, unfortunately, like until we figure out a better way, we rely on these coaches to come in time and time again. And that does impact it. So I think we're aware of it. I don't think we're doing much about it other than saying, hey, we're aware of it. We know this is here. Here's how you can help. Yep. But we still need you.
Yeah, and I think awareness is a big stepping point. Mm. Like at least we are conscious of it now. Like Zoe, how do you distinguish between like normal coaching stress and like burnout and mental health deteriorating?
Yeah, that's tough because, you know, when you look at burnout, that can come from a multitude of different things. It can come from physically being just utterly exhausted, mentally being exhausted, or even not being sort of stimulated by what you're doing anymore as well. Like if you feel like you're past what you're doing, or you want a new challenge, like you're not being challenged, that can also sort of drain away that mental or gnaw at that mental health, I guess. I think distinguishing between the two, though, is actually not anything to do with basketball and everything to do with how you react to things away from basketball. Mm-hmm. So things that would normally make you happy or normally make you feel good, if those things aren't doing that, it's time to evaluate what's going on. You know, it might not be basketball that's the cause or coaching that's the cause, but having a look at, okay, like for instance, if I was to come home one day and say I hate barbecuing now, you'd probably say, well, there's something going on there that's not quite right. Like
thinking about how much money we can make by selling our five barbecues at the moment would be another alternative to look at it. But yeah, I see
that's
your point.
What I mean. It's an outlier. Like it's have a look at. You know, if these other things that normally bring you joy because of embedded stresses in coaching, looking at just those, I think, you know, probably doesn't help create a separator. But if those things outside of coaching aren't bringing you that joy anymore, then it's time to evaluate what's going on. But I think what coaches do well but then also bad is they're really good at recognizing mental health distress in their athletes, really good at being there for them, giving to them, you know, doing all that sort of stuff, really poor at recognizing it in themselves and taking the steps necessary to help better themselves.
Yeah, the action part is obviously a difficult one. And for a lot of people too, being really mindful, basketball might be their outlet. Like that's the reality of it. Like we're talking about it from a lens of obviously we work in the sport. But for a lot of people, they might have the stressful job that causes anxiety and, you know, all those sorts of things. Going to a basketball court might be their happy place where, okay, great, I get to decompress a little bit. I'm not thinking of budgets and proposals and all those sorts of things. What I'm dealing with is just getting kids better at sport. And
connecting with other coaches is probably their social gathering as well.
Big time.
So there's worse places you can do that. So, like, it's...
Absolutely. And that's the mental side of things, like, because... Ultimately, if you're mentally struggling, then you can't be anything for anyone else. And that's, I think, the big challenge in that where like people just reflecting on that. Like, and you don't realize it until you have to literally sit down and think about it and go through it. And it's like, actually, when have I been really good at this? But when have I really struggled at this? And when have I not been where I should be? And those sorts of things are great. Like I've used the Calm app, C-A-L-M, Calm, as in that sort of thing. It is a subscription service. but has like daily meditations and just some things to sort of sit down and think about at times. And there'll be times where it's like, okay, I'll just listen to a podcast on my walk. Sometimes it'll be that where they'll talk about various things. It's like, okay, this is a different space to look at. And, you know, we've all seen the good and the bad of social media for sure. And a lot of people will turn to social media as a way of almost disconnecting from reality. Like they don't want to have to think about anything else, so they'll doom scroll for a little bit. But, you know, the dangers of being caught in your own echo chamber with that and the algorithm that comes with that as well, where you're almost closed off to parts of society in your life, that can be difficult as well. Like if you were to look on like Zoe's TikTok at the moment, you're probably going to see dogs, barbecues and plants. They're probably the – and potentially people falling over being hit by things because she finds that incredibly funny. But
I need to see those videos. Okay. Yeah. As long as they're okay.
You got to show me those videos.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But that's the kind of thing. Like, so you do have issues, I suppose, of trying to find what works for you. And it's not going to be the same for everyone. That's the reality of it. And, you know, if you do need help, please get help. Like, that's the biggest thing is there is now no stigma attached, I don't think, to anyone sort of saying, you know, my mental health is struggling at this point. Where we do probably need to do a little bit of correcting is – I was walking past a couple of kids at Jamboree and they were just mucking around and they were just genuinely mucking around and having fun. And one of the kids is like, oh, I find that triggering. And it was almost a joke. And it's like, let's not go down this path. Like this, don't use that as such a throwaway term anymore. Like we've almost got to take back a little bit because there have been people over the years that have used sort of mental health as almost the, this is my get out of jail free card for the things I've done wrong as well. So making sure that the right people get the right help when they can. And for those that aren't, well, what can we do to intervene in that space as well? So we do have a couple of psychologists booked in to come. We haven't recorded those podcast episodes yet, but they're sort of more towards the back end of the month. So if there is anything you want asked on that, by all means, drop it in the chat or shoot me a message or jump into the DMs or whatever it is and we'll take it to them as well. Because if there's something specific you want to know about, we can certainly help facilitate that as well.
There's also a smaller cohort of coaches where it affects them mentally a bit when they're comparing themselves to other coaches.
Oh, the validation is real.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
And, you know, what's the saying? It's a comparison is the thief of joy.
Yep.
Like that's, you know, that is something that I dealt with early in my coaching where I compared myself to others and where they were standing. Yep. And ever since I let that stuff go, like I've enjoyed my coaching so much more now. It's like so much free and I can try things. And if I make a mistake, that's cool. That's part of coaching. That's part of life.
Yep.
So if you're one of those coaches, like focus on what you can control, not what you can't control. Like people will get positions all the time. You know, they might just be more experienced. They may not be more experienced. They might just know that person. Like you don't know what it is. So like it's definitely there's more and more of that growing. I need to beat that person out. I need to leapfrog this coach to get to this position. Yep. Like we're just seeing more and more of that, I feel. Are you feeling that as well?
Yeah, well, I think that also then plays into why the coaching group or the coaching community is less supportive of each other than all the other communities within basketball.
Agree, yeah.
Because there's that competition and that comparison. So, but I'm much the same. Like I used to, you know, I've got to do this and I've got to do that and I've got to, you know, and then something happens and it's like, you know, what about me? And you know, all that sort of stuff. And I don't have better words because I'm tired, but I just don't care anymore. Like, I don't care about any of that. What I care about is, am I doing right by my athletes? Am I teaching them what they need to be taught to try and get on the pathway that they want or, you know, align with their goals? Am I teaching them helping teach them to be better humans and better people in society? And if I get those right, well then I'm content. I'm pretty happy with that. So I'm not saying abandon ambition. That's definitely not what I'm saying. But you know, you've got to find joy in the great things that you're doing. And it is a great thing to give up your time to try and coach some young kids in anything. but particularly basketball, because it's the greatest sport in the world. But to even if it's just a domestic under-8s team, it is a great thing you're doing by, one, showing what it's like to give and to, you know, sacrifice some time for other people. You're showing that to those young kids by, you know, creating environments where they feel safe and that they can do something that they enjoy and feel that joy and create their community, help them create their community. Because there's so many kids too who don't really have a lot of friends at school but do at basketball. And so that's what kind of gets them through. And you're helping them create that. You're helping teach them discipline. You're helping teach them resilience. It's a massive. It's enormous. And, you know, I think sometimes we fob that off. And it's one of the reasons why I don't think in the coaching community we there's this real, like, because it's athlete-centered or athlete-focused, which it should be, there's this real, like, almost this air of, you know, if you say you've done something well as a coach, you know, you're making it about you, you're arrogant, you're this, you're that. Now, there's certainly some coaches who are making it about them. You know, if you just have a look at some social media posts, you'll see. But, you know, I think it is okay, and I think coaches need to do a better job, even if it's just privately, of writing down, even if it's just once a week, writing down some things they absolutely killed that week within the coaching space. What did I do well this week? Like, I absolutely smashed this. Like, I was great on this detail, or I went and did some PD, or I connected with this athlete that I haven't been able to connect with yet, or, you know, my timeout usage improved, or whatever. It could be as massive as, you know, gaining a role that you've been trying to work towards, and it could be as small as I turned up to practice today and all of my athletes showed joy and love for the game.
Like, it's similar to like a gratefulness journey. Journal, sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
That you're talking about.
Yeah. Which is going to be part of November.
Okay.
But so what we're planning on doing, and it's still very much in its infancy, so if you do have any additional ideas.
Apologies.
No. It's quite okay. It's.
I didn't say much then because I completely agreed with everything you were saying, by the way.
It's
like,
normal.
Yeah.
Like, it's, don't get me wrong, not everyone is for everyone, but there are some commonalities, I think, throughout everyone. And the biggest thing out of all that is that basketball can be the vehicle for whatever you want it to be in that sort of space. So I think for November, we're going to try and look to hit on these four things in particular, like nutrition, mental health, physical fitness and sleep, and try and get you like a week's worth of challenges. And when I say challenges, nothing hard. We're not going to try and push anyone to run like a 5K or anything like that. What we are going to say is, well, okay, can you get 45 minutes by yourself at some point to practice mindfulness? Or can you reach out to someone you haven't spoken to in, you know, however long and just call them and talk to them? Like, can you bury the hatchet with someone? Can you, you know, think about things that you are grateful for in your life and those sorts of things as well? So that's what we're going to try and build all this around. Can you go a week without takeaway, or a week without chocolate, or a week without caffeine, whatever it is? So that's what we're planning for November, with the hope that obviously in November we all live a little bit of a healthier lifestyle coming into the end of the year. December, we know that can be a little bit of a write-off of a month as the social calendar starts to ramp up. But hopefully you do feel a change. It is usually around about 21 days to build a habit, studies would show. But I think you'll normally feel it a little bit before then. In that sort of space. To be honest, it's usually 3 or 4 days of eating better, exercising better, and you do tend to feel better. It is one of those things. You may not show it straight away, but you will feel better after about 3 or 4 days in that sort of space. So that's the plan. If you've got any thoughts or suggestions on that, by all means, shoot them through, and we'll try and help on as many of those as we possibly can.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So the social split talk this week is a little bit apt and very similar to what you were talking about before, Nick, as it happens.
One day, a monk is teaching his students about enlightenment, and he says to them, if you're holding a cup of coffee and somebody bumps into you and you spill that coffee, Why did you spill the coffee? The entire class answers, because somebody bumped into me. No, says the monk. You spilled the coffee because there was coffee in your cup. That's what you were carrying. Had you been carrying tea in your cup, then you would have spilled tea. See, whatever you're carrying is what will spill out. Life is the same way. When life shakes you, which it will, whatever you're carrying inside of you will spill out of you. If you're carrying anger and fear and hatred and jealousy, that is what will spill out of you. But if you're carrying love and kindness and compassion and empathy, then that is what is going to spill out of you. So each morning, it's important to stop and close your eyes and ask yourself, what am I carrying within me today?
So that's one that we can sort of look at, obviously, holistically. And it's like, well, where are we at with various things? But, you know, again, you are the people you surround yourself with. And if, you know, you surround yourself with super positive people, you are more likely to be super positive in that sort of space. Not that everyone has to be, but it is one of those things where you have to really pay attention, I think, more than anything else, as to what sort of state are you in. And I think those self-reflection and journaling and those sorts of things can really help with that, as to work out where you're at. But that does wrap us up for this week. Appreciate you guys jumping in on this one. Zoe, you can go back to sleep now.
Thank you.
We'll catch you again at some point on the podcast in the future. Coaches, we'll catch you all next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.